Game designers come in all shapes and sizes. It's also really important to remember that game designers come in all ages and experiences too. We're judged on the last game that we ever made. So often, some game designers disappear into the ether because either their games are not credible for the current marketplace or that they've just moved into another area of software development. Either way, there's enough space in the game design universe for everybody. So let's take a look at this week's game designer who has a specific style, a specific way of designing, and a specific way of making you think about game development. Not much is known about this game designer except for his games. And his games really speak for themselves. And the reason why we don't know so much about this game designer is because the Japanese style of game development is completely different to westernized games. One of the reasons why is because Japanese corporate structure styles are totally different to how we work in the West. This game designer, Kazuhiro Hamatani, is a bit of a hero. Well, for me anyway. And one of the reasons why is because, well, he's a bit of an unsung hero of bringing turn-based Japanese RPGs into more of an action-adventure style. His story for us begins in 2002, when he worked on something called Otogi, which you may have heard of. I absolutely love Otogi games. There are two Otogi games that we know of. There's Otogi Myth of Demons and Otogi 2 Immortal Warriors. And what he did in these two games was he was involved in something called Planning Department. Now, the way that video games are made in Japan is in two ways. Either as a software development process or something more cinematically. If you work for Hironobu Sakaguchi, you're going to work in a more cinematic style. The same, I guess, these days goes for if you work for Hideo Kojima. You're going to work in a very cinematic format and a cinematic way. So it's important to remember that titles such as Planning Department don't necessarily mean that he's sitting there drawing out like maps and whatever. But the possibility is that he's heavily involved in the design process and he's working on a level by level process. We know this because as he progresses through his career, we see the fruits of his abilities start to appear in his games. If I can bring you closer to today and talk about a game called Enchanted Arms, you might understand what I mean. Although he's worked on the two Otogis, Kuon and Metal Wolf Chaos by this point, it's Enchanted Arms that really made me prick up my ears massively and think, ooh, this is interesting. What we're actually talking about is a studio now and not a person. I feel really weird talking about it, but I am a huge fan of From Software. Not all of what From Software does, but what I really enjoy is the way that they've combined JRPG and action adventure into one lovely package for us to enjoy. And it kind of starts with Enchanted Arms in 2006. It came to the Xbox 360 in 2006 in the West and for the PlayStation 3 in 2007. If you haven't played this game, or you think you've played it and you're not quite sure, it's also called Enchant Arms in Japanese. The combat's got similar combat to Final Fantasy Tactics and other turn-based strategy games. However, you do enter into random combat scenarios, pretty much like you would in any of the Final Fantasies, to be honest. Everybody loves a bit of random encounter, and Enchanted Arms is a kind of beautiful mix of visual novel style and, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics and turn-based gameplay. It's about a guy called Atsuma. He studies to become an enchanter with his friends Makoto and Toya. And if you know about any of the Enchanted Arms memes, you'll know that Makoto is, wow, just international man of mystery. But they study at the Enchanters University in Yokohama City. They skip class to attend a local festival, which is awesome. And you really start to get immersed in the storytelling because, you know, they're really great at world building. Hamatami especially, as we talk about his other games, you'll start to realise that actually what these guys are really good at is setting the scene and building the world. Now, this game didn't get such a great deal of love from the community, and it certainly didn't get like the best reviews you've ever read in your life. But I thoroughly enjoyed playing this game. I liked playing the game from the following perspectives. First of all, Hamatami's writing comes through. It's really nice. He works with Masanori Takaguchi and Kato Sata. But what I really loved, and still super love to this day, is how From Software use soundtracks to their absolute advantage. And Yuki Ichiki is the composer for Enchanted Arms and brings about this weird classical style, postmodern, apocalyptic Japanese vibe to the entire process, either through the sound design that he works on with the rest of the team or that what Yuki brings to the soundtrack himself. So in this world, it's not Japan, and yet everything is so Japanese in it. Artists Kichiro Ogawa, Daisuke Satake, and Hiroaki Ueno bring this cosplay style to the game's overall theme. In fact, recently I just watched a Korean drama series about a royal family where the royal family was wearing almost the identical uniform that Rygar in Enchanted Arms is wearing throughout the game. I'm not going to give you any spoilers about this game because it's really great, but it's a little bit of a departure from what From Software are now best known for. It's certainly not the normal that you would expect from From Software. So what did Hamatami do next? Have you heard of a game called Ninja Blade? Yes, of course you have. Everybody's heard of Ninja Blade because it's absolutely amazing. And in this game, again, he's listed as lead planner. And, you know, what we're really talking about here is that planners are, to all intents and purposes, designers or assistant directors and directors. What we're looking at is world building and combat design, as well as level design and general mission design. As we all know, Ninja Blade is set in 2011. A small village in South America is attacked by unknown creatures. Upon inspecting the survivors, a new type of hookworm is discovered and classified as Alpha Worm. Now, Kichiro Ogawa, who is an artist, is actually credited with the direction of Ninja Blade. But Hamatami builds the story along with Masanori Takeuchi. So the player plays as a modern day ninja in this game, and you've got the traditional ninja stuff, but it's set in 2011. So the combat's going to be pretty gory and really sort of aggressive. Using a katana, twin swords and a broadsword as the main weapon, you basically take down the hostile creatures. The combat system's similar to Ninja Gaiden or Devil May Cry, so it's your classic hack and slash. You've got a chi bar, which is used up when ninja vision or ninjutsu is used, and the gameplay is cinematic, which is what From Software, you know, are just great at. They're just really good at building cinematic design and gameplay. They rely on quick time events to finish the missions. After attacking the boss, or until the health bar is empty, the player must perform a finishing move called the Todome. Okay, let's just talk about this a little bit, because from a design perspective, relying on quick time events to finish missions is exactly the type of thing that, if you've played Enchanted Arms, happens. So you get so far in the game, you're just about to destroy the boss, and a little bit like Cloud Strife's Limit Break, you'll find yourself propelled into a quick time event. And usually, in the case of Enchanted Arms, you can play in slow motion, and you can also play in double time. That was a trend at the time for a lot of Japanese games that transferred easily into the Western market. There was an opportunity to play really quickly through the end of a boss fight or the end of a random encounter so that you could carry on moving through the world. So as we watch Kazuhiro Hamatami's career progress, we start to see that his combination of story and design comes out in a really cinematic way, as if you're watching a Hollywood movie. And we can attest the same sort of ideals and styles to Kojima, for example. Not so much to directors and designers like Sakaguchi, because they follow a bit more of a linear style of game design, which is not a bad thing if you're doing a JRPG. But what came next for Hamatami? Has anybody ever heard of Bloodborne? Bloodborne is like, well, Bloodborne is like an absolutely incredibly brilliant game where the inhabitants of this Victorian era city, set in no time really, have been afflicted with this abnormal bloodborne disease. Ultimately, attempting to find the source of the plague, the player's character unravels the city's intriguing mysteries while fighting beasts. Isn't it really important that for a game designer who creates such beautifully lush environments, along with the art team and the direction generally, can create something in Bloodborne that's so totally closed, almost like the city is a citadel? Bloodborne began development in 2012 under the working title of Project Beast. We'd all heard about it and we were all like, really, woo, what's gonna happen? And of course it bore many similarities to the Soul series of games by the same developer and director. Everyone agrees that Bloodborne is partially inspired by authors like H.P. Lovecraft and Bram Stoker. And if you're a game designer yourself, you'll probably be an avid reader of either the fantasy or the science fiction genre. I personally like a romance novel, but that's just me. But if we talk about H.P. Lovecraft and Bram Stoker, you start to realise that these two writers particularly are very cinematic. They build the dynamic of dramaturgy and structure on the basis of cinematics, a scene-by-scene episodic dynamic building to a crescendo. Hidetaka Miyazaki was the game director of this game, and obviously in the From Software studio, these guys are really well versed at creating this kind of pseudo role-playing, hack-and-slashy, action-y type experience. What they managed to do with this game was throw up more gameplay opportunities through expansions like The Old Hunters. And by the end of 2015, this game had sold over 2 million copies worldwide. It also has a card game and a really successful comic book series. So you go through Yharnam and you fight loads of enemies, including bosses. You collect useful items that help you to put together or pull together the story of the city and how dark it is. And you interact with a lot of non-player characters. The difference is that in previous games that I've played, like Enchanted Arms from Software particularly, there was a lack of interactivity. And I think that by the time Bloodborne came out, this was really popular thanks to games like basically the Elder Scrolls series, you know, Mass Effect, Deus Ex, etc. And one of the things that I really found interesting about playing Bloodborne was how much it reminded me of Halo. Halo 3 particularly. Not least from the combat situation, that's really interesting, but from the world building and level development situation, there's so many similarities between how the player plays the game and how you would play Halo. I'm pretty sure that a lot of people are going to come back to me and say, no, it's more like Devil May Cry or Bayonetta or whatever, but you know, the combat is really fast. It requires a player to be super offensive. Like, you can't wait for things to come to you. You're going to have to go to them. And that kind of was the same ideas that we had with Halo 3. So, the Flood. The Flood particularly is a very interesting comparison that I can make between what's going on in Bloodborne and what was going on in Halo, because it was a Horde approach to combat development and design, which is of its time, and we had to compete at that time with games like Warcraft, where people were playing in teams and going against hordes in multi-user dungeon scenarios. So I kind of get why you would see that kind of thing in console development as well, because we had to steal a pace on those guys. Now, the character's really agile, which didn't happen in some of the other games. The player character and the character generally can dodge attack and can strafe, and it's become much more like maybe Last Remnant, or if you've played Lost Odyssey, especially in the way that there's a risk and reward style of gameplay, and there is the rally system, which allows a player within a small window of time to recover portions of lost health by striking an enemy. Again, that's something that you're going to see in World of Warcraft, Death of the Ancients, League of Legends, etc. Now, there were levels of complexity that was on top of the weapon system, which I didn't really like. There were trick weapons which could like easily transform into alternate states, and each state encouraged a different approach to combat. I don't really like that kind of combat, but I can see why some people like it. I really do think that if you've got a complex world and complex characters, and you already have the dynamism of having to work out what the story's about, that you've got to turn down the complexity of the combat system to allow for the player to actually play. And this leads me really nicely onto Dark Souls 3. Dark Souls 3 is a game where Hamatani acted again as some sort of project support. And in Dark Souls 3, I'm not really sure whether Hamatani was massively involved in the overall design. So the corporate structure of From Software means that in this scenario, these guys are working on a bunch of titles, maybe in a prototype phase or other. And really what Hamatani was doing was just supporting the team in making Dark Souls 3. This could be from a variety of ways. But let's not for 1 minute discount that Dark Souls isn't a great game. Dark Souls generally is a fantastic IP and world that people still absolutely adore and talk about today. I mean, Dark Souls 3 only came out in 2016 and Fire Fades was released in 2017. So it's still very much in the sort of players' hearts and minds in terms of levels of fanboy and fangirl madness. But this action role-playing video game is absolutely fantastic, and it bears all the hallmarks of previous From Software games, and it just looks as though these guys have really come full circle and just totally grown up with their game, and from Kingsfield back in 1994 up to present day, which we're going to talk about in a moment, you can really see that Hamatami has grown as a designer in everything that Hamatami's done. So finally, Hamatani has hit the big time. The big time, because here comes Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. And this is set in Sengoku era Japan in the 1500s. There's an unnamed shinobi tasked with protecting a young lord of mystical lineage who is left for dead when a powerful samurai attacks and chops off his arm. Wow, we really have come full circle. No spoilers, but maybe you should all start playing Enchanted Arms. So Kazuhiro Hamatami is credited here with Hidetaka Miyazaki as co-director. It came out in March 2019, and Hidetaka Miyazaki has said that he wanted to create a new intellectual property that marked a departure from the Souls series of games, which are also made by From, and looked to series such as Tenchu for inspiration. It received universal acclaim, and I guess one of the reasons why is from the gameplay perspective. It's got fewer role-playing elements in it. There's no character creation at the beginning of the game. You kind of literally jump in play, and you're able to level up a variety of stats as well as having no multiplayer elements. So effectively, this is trading card style. This is a bit rolling for stats and rolling for skills. But it does include gear upgrading, skill trees, and limited ability customization. Rather than attacking to take down health points, combat in Sekiro revolves around using a katana to attack posture and balance, which eventually leads to an opening that allows for a single killing blow. So we're back in that sort of place that we were with Hamatani, where doing the kind of limit break style of gameplay. The game's got stealth elements. It allows players to immediately eliminate some enemies if they can get in range. And the player character's got the ability to use various tools to assist with combat and exploration, such as a grappling hook. If the player dies, they've got the option of being revived on the spot if they have a resurrection power, Phoenix Down, which is restored by defeating enemies instead of respawning at earlier checkpoints. And the development's quite interesting because it started in late 2015, which means that Hamatani naturally could not be involved in Dark Souls 3. He's obviously working on Shadows Die Twice. What is really important about this game is that, again, it's very cinematic and it's incredibly artistic. It's ridiculous. It's so deep that it's sort of taken that detail of Bloodborne and Dark Souls and sort of combined the intensity of the graphical content, meaning that there's probably not enough space on any disc to be able to put in expansive gameplay opportunities. They wanted the experience to be a fully single player experience. They wanted the feeling of swords clashing because it's very authentic with what it was they were trying to do with the Shogunic era of the 1500s. Sekiro actually means one-armed wolf in Japanese. And while the subtitle Shadows Die Twice was originally only meant as a slogan, Activision requested it to be kept for the final name. It is an absolutely brilliant game, and it really shows the journey that Hamatani has gone on as a designer, effectively coming full circle as a director, co-director of the game with Miyazaki. I can't help but think though that what From Software do so fantastically well is the one thing that they have not yet fully gifted us, the consumer of their games, and that is world building, fully immersive world building. Everybody I speak to about Dark Souls, Bloodborne, and like the five people that have ever played Enchanted Arms, even if you talk to people who've played King's Field, one of the things that you always get from them is, wow, that's an amazing world, I'd love to stay in it. So my big hope for Hamatani's next game is that he'll be able to come up with the goods and give us a world, maybe in VR, a little bit like Kojima, where we can live, work, breathe, eat and sleep the world that he has created for us. Otherwise, we're just going to have to keep waiting for more Dark Souls and more immersive IP. So until next time, keep making and keep playing.
Thank you for listening. You can tweet Kelly at Electric Geisha. Follow Your Doing It Wrong podcast where all good pods are casted. Email Kelly at doingitwrongpod@gmail.com.